The Healthy Alabama podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama, a program that enrolls Alabamians in the health insurance marketplace.
Enroll Alabama is a project of AIDS Alabama. For more information, visit the website AIDSAlabama.org. Welcome to another edition of the Healthy Alabama podcast, sponsored by Enroll Alabama, which is a project of AIDS Alabama, a great organization in Birmingham on the front lines of the fight to prevent the spread of the HIV and the disease AIDS. This is a first for this podcast to have in the studio an elected official. And I'm proud to have my friend Anthony Daniels. He is the minority leader for the Alabama Legislature, Democrats. Anthony, great to have you on the Healthy Alabama podcast.
Thank you, David. It's always good to be with you.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And of course, we have, we've got some history, and so we spent a good amount of time before I turned on the microphones just talking politics. I want to say up front, we're not talking politics today. We're here to talk about health. And I can think of no better elected official in the state of Alabama on a podcast about health in Alabama to have on than Anthony, because I know for a fact that you are concerned about your own personal health. In fact, you actually called me this morning and said, I'm just coming from the gym, so no pictures, right? that cracked me up. But I know you do take your, all kidding aside, you do take your health seriously, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's, you have a family. I have a family history of heart disease and diabetes. In fact, a lot of people don't know it, and I recently found out I have type 2 diabetes. I was diagnosed in 2009 or 10, but the doctor physician, the primary care physician that I'm seeing now, said that it's type 1 that I've had probably since I was a teenager, but just never knew it because I never had a lot of consistent doctor visits, raised primarily by my grandparents. Unless something was wrong, you typically didn't go to the doctor. And so that's something that, I'm paying very close attention to right now.
So since you have discovered this, and you said you're paying close attention to it, what does that mean? What do you do?
Well, right now I'm trying to, I'm doing a lot. I'm doing more exercise, changing my diet up a whole lot, removing a lot of the habits that many of us have. When you're down in the legislature, there's a lot of, out socially, you always, you drink wine or you have some social drink. And so just trying to cut back on all of those, eliminate those things, and also pay attention to my sugar intake. And so it's a lifestyle transformation and getting more exercise and trying to get less stress, because stress can cause health issues as well.
No doubt. Cutting back on the alcohol or eliminating it, cutting back on the sugar, or some people even go as far as to eliminating it. Those are good things. Working out is definitely a good thing. You touched on lowering your stress levels. We just had not too long ago had on the podcast Donna Green Goodman. She is a 22-year cancer survivor. And one of the things that Donna did, now Donna, when she was diagnosed with breast cancer over 22 years ago, Anthony, one thing she did, was already doing, was she was a vegetarian, okay? She shifted into what some people call the vegan lifestyle or plant-based diet lifestyle, where she just eliminated not only meat, but dairy products and eggs from her diet. But the other thing that she did that's really key and ties into what you just said is Donna decided to confront some of the emotional baggage that she'd been carrying for years. She said there were some people that she had to make amends with and some people she had to confront over some things. And I think there were also some people she had to get out of her life. And so for her, it was people and relationships that had been stressors. I would imagine for you, one of the biggest stressors, and again, we're not talking politics today, But we're talking about your job. You are the House Minority Leader. That means you're the top-ranked Democrat in the Alabama legislature. That's got to be a stressful job.
It is a stressful job, and so I'm trying to take really a different approach this time and really engage and delegate and also build a pipeline for other leaders to be able to fill some of those voids. Because if you don't see it done, it's very difficult to know how it's done. And so just really understanding and really empowering other members to be involved in the process and really so that I can be around for my children. And so I realize the stress, the stress that this job is it causes. But, I'm determined, not that this is a cure for stress, but I am determined to take care of more of Anthony, making certain that we're getting I'm getting regular exercise. In fact, I've tasked a new member, a freshman, with making certain that we have a workout group on Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Nice.
While we're in, Wednesday and Thursdays while we're in Montgomery.
Good.
Where a group of us go and play, play basketball, pickup game, basketball or workout in the gym together, not just for bonding, but also to really have discussions about our health. Because as African-American men, we are, some of my best friends that I never knew are on like blood pressure medication. And in fact, majority of them are. And so, but as black men, we very rarely talk about those things. It's like we're so macho to where we feel like, we don't want to, have those discussions. And so I'm just trying to get to that point, also incorporate more things that I believe will reduce stress over time and really relax you, incorporating more meditation and, getting a monthly or biweekly massage during the session. But also doing things to really relax myself and force myself to relax. And so have standard appointments.
Look, let me tell you, I have been a major proponent of massage for probably 30 years. I have, over the past 2 or 3 years, though, I have been religiously getting the biweekly massage. In fact, people that listen to the podcast know not only do I get biweekly massage, but massage literally saved me from surgery. At one point in time when I was in the newspaper business and typing, frantically every day, every work day, for hours at a time, I developed carpal tunnel syndrome. And it was massage that kept me from having to go to surgery. And when I told my massage therapist what was going on, she explained to me that carpal tunnel was just the bunching of these nerves here, under the wrist, I guess it is. And she said, we can stretch out those nerves and tendons and whatever else is in there, and that will alleviate the carpal tunnel. And she was right. When I went back to my doctor, he was amazed that I was no longer needed the medicine, no longer needed the hand brace. He just told me, God bless you, keep doing what you're doing. And so that's what I do. I'm a big believer in massage. So I'm glad to hear you say that. Let's talk about the state of Alabama for a minute. So you were kind and generous enough to, while you're here, to do the interview for this podcast. You also went into the other studio and did an on-air interview, a brief on-air interview with our the morning host here at WJOU, Donna Baker. And you talked to Donna about the fact that you plan to focus, now that you've been reelected, you plan to focus over the next 4 years on reducing poverty. When I heard you say that, of course, I was elated because that's something that's a part of my portfolio, addressing poverty issues through my work. And I was particularly interested in the connection, as I thought about what you were saying, Anthony, the connection between poverty and health. Do you, as a politician, as an elected official, do you see a connection between the high poverty rate in this state and the health challenges that many people in the state have?
Absolutely. I think that for the most part, it starts with education. If you're you do what you see. Oftentimes in our communities, we do what we see that have been done before us. And, you know, we're kind of, you know, we do what our family members have done before us. And so we really get all of the, we adopt a lot of patterns and traits that are not necessarily our own. And so oftentimes, you know, historically, we've been very focused, like eating, for example. Soul food has just been sort of something that has been in our DNA as a race, and so it's hard to get away from that. And so, but not really understanding that, you know, the impact that soul food will have on you and your body and your health long term. And so, I think that it starts more with an education. You know, really educating our community. Focusing more on environmental issues, focusing on more gardening, getting back to the basics of growing your own vegetables and doing things so that you know exactly what's in what you're getting out of your garden, as opposed to what you're getting out of a lot of these different stores. And so, just doing more of a natural and more organic eating. You know, we gotta really focus on that. It is more expensive, and traditionally, when you have a dollar or you want it to go a long way, but oftentimes, you know, you may think you're saving money for the long term, but you're really hurting. That cost is going to be eaten up in your healthcare costs, and so you're really not saving money on the back end. And so, I think educating our community, and yes, there is a direct correlation, and we got to do a better job of really educating people in general, people that are in poverty in general, regardless of what your race is, about healthier eating and ways to really live a better and a healthier life.
You know, you can spend, I think, $3 or $4 on a big family-sized bag of potato chips, or maybe you can spend, you know, $3 or $4 or maybe $5 or $6, not much more, on a bag of apples. You know, and I'm not even saying eliminate the potato chips necessarily, even though you probably should, and I probably should, speaking to myself. But the bag of apples is going to take you much further in terms of your health and investing in your health.
Absolutely. I think, you know, for me, you know, this past week, my wife and I started focusing more on juicing. And so we've been juicing for the last 4 or 5 days. And so I may eat one solid meal per day. And so the juicing and really focusing more on getting your vegetables, the green juicing is what we primarily focus on, and smoothies as well from Earth Fare, or we make our own at home. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're trying that out just to kind of see what that does, you know, for our health and how it makes us feel. But for the most part, we're trying to reset our taste buds so that we can start changing our eating habits. And so, you know, those are just some of the things that I think are extremely important. But what we also have to look at is, you know, we know that we do what others have done before us. So oftentimes we need sort of like a healthy trainer, not necessarily a workout trainer, but a healthy trainer, a peer group that holds each other accountable. And so those are some of the things that I think we have to start doing as a community and as people, because oftentimes, you know, you having that accountability person kind of keeps you from moving off track. And when you say something publicly, like if I say something publicly, you know, I have to follow through on it. And so, you know, I'm going to start posting things to talk about this workout that I'm doing and the eating that I'm doing, which will force people to engage. They'll engage and figure out more and may join you in the journey. And so then it forces me, because I don't want to let them down. And then it forces them because they don't want to let me down and they want to be there with me. And so we got to start doing more things like that. And it's a psychological thing. Oftentimes it's hard to eat healthy. I'm telling you, it's very hard. It's easy to go to McDonald's. It's because we live in this microwavable world and we want to get things pretty quick. But you know, but for the long haul, I think that for me, having young kids, you know, I want to be around. I want to be able to, you know, a few months ago, I was, you know, taking my little girl out to kick the soccer ball. She wanted to go out and kick the soccer ball, what have you, or kicking in the house too.
Yeah.
and so, you know, getting on the floor with her, I felt, you know, how difficult it was for me to really get down there, even in, you know, at my age. And so I was like, man, I got to do something to try to
because you're a young man. You're still in your 30s.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
36.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I've had these sports injuries and different things that are really – so I'm just trying to turn around and really be there and live a long and a healthier life.
I'm 20 years older than you are. So, I mean, I've got a lot less time to address some of these things. But I'm going to do it, and I'm taking it seriously because I understand the need. But I think it's great that you, at your age, are doing it. That's phenomenal. That's good. That's going to be good for you and your family. It's going to be really good. Now, let's talk about policy for a minute. Do you think that there are ways that government can institute policies that can help us in this area?
I think for the most part, the role of government is very different than one would expect, because you also have people that are very resistant to anyone telling them what to do, infringing upon their rights. But I think that there are things that we can do to encourage the change. I think that we could, you know, when you're dealing with your health insurance, and you know, there are a number of people that are very dependent, especially those below the poverty line, which are more likely to have more health issues because they're unable to get to a physician to focus on the preventative side. And so incentivizing government, the programs that are government programs like Medicaid and Medicare and others, encouraging more of the preventative side. I think that there have been some of that done through the Obamacare. I think that there are some variations of that. But from a state perspective, start incentivizing people to make better decisions. I think with the SNAP program, you know, food stamp program, I think that really looking at preferred items that and incentivizing individuals to really going and eating more, you know, natural, you know, natural things and really getting certain brands and different things to that's going to make, you know, make things better for them long term. So I think with the current government programs that are out there, I think that there is a way to build a comprehensive plan to encourage individuals and incentivize individuals to eat healthier, but also push them into really doing more of a more walking 30 minutes a day and making it easier for them. Like, you know, there are a lot of people that probably don't really build in time to do this, right? And it's easy to make excuses not to do something that you're not accustomed to doing, and I'm guilty of that myself. But, you know, just really forcing myself, you know, instead of working out, you know, you want to work out at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, it's hard for someone that going to go to bed at 10 or 11 o'clock. Well, let's build in the schedule to set the routine, if you have kids, to go to bed at 8 o'clock or 8:30, right? There's nothing going on at 8 o'clock and 8:30 at night, unless you're watching the national championship game, that prevents you from being able to get up earlier. And so I think that those are some of the things that we really need to look at doing. And I think that it's not a one-size-fit-all approach. Oftentimes, government they miss the point, right? They get it right because they're trying to help people, but they end up missing the point and implementing or integrating a one size fit all approach to something that needs to be variations of it, you know, different, because, you know, understanding different cultures. I mean, if you are culturally sensitive to the policies and the programs that you're pushing, I think that those individuals that are recipients of it, it'll go a lot further and it'll be a lot more effective. And so those are some of the things that I think that we could do in incentivizing employers. and tying all of it together.
Mm-hmm. You alluded to something that I want to explore as we begin to wrap up the podcast today, and that is you alluded to the expansion of Medicaid. That is something, of course, that is a very hot button political issue. Many of us in this state, Democrats like yourself and myself and candidates, have been pushing for the expansion of Medicaid. The Republicans in the state have been virulently resistant to this. Now that we've gone through another election cycle and Republicans in the state have retained control of the executive branch and the legislative branch. Well, they've retained control of all three branches, but I want to focus on those two because that's really where the policy generation happens. Do you believe that there might be a possibility that, especially also in light of the shift in Congress, towards a Democratic House, do you think there is a remote possibility that maybe the state of Alabama might consider expanding Medicaid under this administration?
I think that with this current governor, I could see her looking at this because she is a little bit different than most. She's certainly not played as much into the political pandering as most that have run for office in the past. And so I do see and hope and somewhat optimistic about her doing some variation of an Alabama-based expansion or whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter what you call it.
Right.
And so I do see that possibly happening. I do see an appetite in the legislature. I do see my role as being more of a role of negotiating and being a hardline negotiator on compromise on other items that may lead to movement on this item, particular item. And so that's kind of where I'm shifting my politics into being more dogmatic on things that I think that are as a policy as it relates to policy that we're not going to budge on, but also negotiating on things that we might not necessarily agree with, but we get to a point to where if we are offering support for certain items that we in return these are the items that I think we will want you to consider and want to happen. And so just kind of getting in that posture is what I hoped to move, which I hope to move us in.
Well, I've noticed that you and the governor seem to actually have a good working relationship. I mean, from the time she's been in office. Mm-hmm. In fact, if I recall, actually, you had a pretty decent relationship with the previous governor, the ousted mm-hmm. governor, Bentley, as well, even though they're Republicans and you're a Democrat. So you think that just to recap, and I want to make sure I'm clear on this, you're saying that you think there may be a way for you and the Democrats using political mechanisms and negotiation and some horse trading mm-hmm. to get the state of Alabama or get the Republicans to endorse some version of Medicaid expansion.
I think so. I think that I'm very optimistic about some variations of that.
And you think that'll happen in this current election, in this year, this legislative term?
I think that there will be a mechanism put in place to prepare for it.
I think
that there will be, it will be probably be incremental, but I do think that for me, the first, there's a misunderstanding out there, misperception out there about Medicaid, right? So we have to continue to hit home on who are recipients of Medicaid. Currently, children, pregnant women, and the disabled are the only individuals that can receive Medicaid. So this idea that individuals are sitting in front of their television, flipping through the channels every day and not working purposely is just not true. And so I think from a branding perspective, in order to move the public, general public's view and perception that Medicaid is a handout, not a hand up, we have to do a better job of really getting out there and explaining that so that we can shift public opinion that those individuals that may be against it. But also tie into it your local hospital and your community has a chance, they're in financial trouble, could possibly be closed down if we don't expand Medicaid. But understand that expanding Medicaid is not the magic wand. So if there are 24 hospitals that are set to close that are in financial trouble, it'll save 12 of them. But the mere fact that it'll save them is important, because you can't recruit industry in an area that don't have a hospital, have a vibrant education system. It's just it's in good infrastructure. It's just a no-brainer. And so if you want your community to grow, this is how it grows. If you want your community to continue the poverty rate continue to increase and people continue to move out of that community and it becomes a ghost town, then don't accept it or don't support it.
You know, the way, and I said we weren't going to get political, and I've tried not to do that, but I got to say, quite honestly, as a progressive Democrat, hearing you articulate it the way you just did, it just makes me think, why didn't we do that in this last election cycle? Because that, you know, that's so not about the partisan stuff. That's about the everyday struggle that many people have, and also the everyday reality that could be if we don't address this. Because you talked about hospitals closing. That's not hypothetical. Mm-hmm. That's real. That's happened. 11 hospitals. Doctor practices closing. That's not hypothetical. That's real. And people don't, I don't think people get it. They don't understand that the flow of money from the feds, you know, a lot of people in this state, and I don't have to tell you this, a lot of people in this state, you know, look down their nose at federal funding and try to act as though we could survive without it. No, we can't.
Absolutely.
We can't.
And you know, there's no better example of a community that really, you know, most of its, the largest employer for this community is very dependent upon federal funding. So we would not be able to operate. Our retail stores will be impacted. Our, you know, our entire community, the entire way of life in our community. And so, you know, those individuals that don't think that, it's not depending upon the government to really help them, then they're totally, on another planet.
Twilight Zone or something. Another planet, Twilight Zone. Another solar system. I am really glad, Anthony, that you joined us today. State Representative Anthony Daniels, he represents the 52nd District. I'm sorry, 53rd District. Yeah, 53rd District here in North Alabama, and is also the House Minority Leader. Well, I wish he was the House Majority Leader, but he's the House Minority Leader in the Alabama Legislature. Anthony, thank you very much for joining us today and for your commitment to the health and well-being of all Alabamians.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always good talking to you, and I follow you on Facebook and really keep in touch with what you're doing, so I'm just very inspired that and very appreciative that you're continuing to really do the things that you've done. You know, you may change venues, but the content is still the same.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The Healthy Alabama podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama, a project of AIDS Alabama. It is produced in partnership with Praise 90.1 FM, WJOU, here on the beautiful Oakland University campus. I'm David Person, the host and producer. And our theme music, I need to get that in. Our theme music was produced by DJ Bailey. Until next time, be healthy.